Thank you, John Guy, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, April 24th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gandhi.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The MDCT says its Member of Parliament for Budiriro, Costa Machingauta, is battling for his life in a local hospital after he was attacked yesterday by suspected ZANU-PF supporters.
The situation back home is quite dire and is quite dangerous. Right now, they've actually beaten Honorable Machingauta. And you see, the police will not do anything, neither the government will do anything. No investigations are going to be done.
A former Mafungo provincial minister, Kudakwashe Basikiti, claims that his successor, Shivai Mawofa, is allegedly trying to relocate 20,000 people settled in Nyuanetsi Ranch in order to corruptly accommodate ZANU-PF-linked businessman Billy Rottenbusch.
Certain coffee was built for the people to benefit, not for one individual company, not for Billy Rottenbusch.
And a human rights activist says South Africa should prosecute perpetrators of the xenophobic violence that has seen more than 7 people losing their lives in the past few weeks.
Once again, we are concerned by the impunity that seems to accompany this type of violence, where people are being arrested but not being charged with murder, for example. We've only had one arrest.
The MDCT says its Member of Parliament for Budiriro, Costa Machingauta, is battling for his life in a local hospital after he was attacked yesterday by suspected ZANU-PF supporters. The party claims that ZANU-PF activists attacked Machingauta and several other members at Budiriro Shopping Center following a rally on electoral reforms convened by MDCT leader Morgan Tsvangirai. MDCT Organizing Secretary Abednego Bebe tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube that the attacks are a barbaric act by President Robert Mugabe's party members.
The situation back home is quite dire and is quite dangerous. Right now, they've actually beaten Honorable Machingauta for that matter. And you see, the police will not do anything, neither the government will do anything. No investigations are going to be done. We are actually seeing that we are actually ruled by a tyranny that has actually destroyed not only our lives, our hope, our future, our children's lives. For 35 years, we've been ruled by this monster, and this monster does not change. It's high time that Zimbabwe should come together in mind, come together in deeds, and really push ZANU-PF through a hard and emphatic vote.
Do you think that the police are going to investigate this and actually get the perpetrators of this kind of violence?
Well, the police, I'm not seeing them investigating, because we have seen how they react to anyone who is opposed to ZANU. We have seen them leaving people scot-free, who have actually abducted people, violated people's rights. And we've seen the same police arresting people without actually trial. We've seen the same people arresting people on fabricated charges.
That was Abednego Bebe, MDCT National Organizing Secretary, speaking with Studio 7 from Bulawayo. ZANU-PF spokesman Simon Kayamoyo was not available for comment as he was not responding to calls. We reached ZANU-PF activist and political commentator Maurice Ngwenya, who says the MDCT's claims are frivolous.
This is a stage-managed incident whereby the MDC people are trying to look for sympathy by fighting against each other, disguised as perhaps ZANU-PF people. But in reality, ZANU-PF is in no way receiving any threat from the so-called MDC, because the so-called MDC is now a name or a title that belongs to only those leaders that are enjoying the little donor funds that are coming through to them. But otherwise, in reality, there is no way someone who supports the ZANU-PF feels threatened by anyone calling himself or herself MDC, because really, in terms of the politics of this country, MDC is history. It's gone. It's dead and buried.
But Mr. Ngwenya, some of the victims are claiming that they know some of the ZANU-PF activists who actually attacked them. So how then can you say maybe they are making up a story here?
Yes, it's because it's a stage management thing. They know those people who attacked them because they belong to the same party. The other people are disguised as ZANU-PF, what if they are not? They know each other, of course. So if they are really genuine, why don't they go to the police and make those people arrested?
That was Maurice Ngwenya, a ZANU-PF activist and political commentator, speaking with Gibbs Duves of Studio 7.
Former Mashingo provincial minister Kudakwashi Basikiti has come out swinging against his successor Shuai Maofa, accusing her of allegedly trying to relocate 20,000 people settled in Nwanetse Range in order to corruptly accommodate ZANU-PF linked businessman Billy Rotenberg. Basikiti says he has written a letter to President Robert Mugabe allegedly exposing Maofa. Last week, Maofa told Studio 7 that the families who were first moved from the Tokwe Mkosi Basin due to flooding will be moved to 7 farms that have been identified by the government. Nwanetse Range has been at the center of a dispute between government and a private company, Development Trust of Zimbabwe, founded by the late Vice President Joshua Nkomo. Rotenberg has entered into a partnership with DTZ in the formation of the Zimbabwe Bioenergy Ethanol Project.
Rotenberg's Zimbabwe Bioenergy Company proposed long back to build an ethanol plant in Mwenezi way before the Sumbanje one, but was allegedly being blocked by the ousted Joyce Mujuru ZANU-PF faction, which was in the provincial structures of government and ZANU-PF then. Rotenberg is believed to have strong links to Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Basikiti tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that Maofa has dirty hands.
All which is required is putting water, piped water for the 1 hectare settlements and the irrigation water for 2 hectares, which is yet to be pegged. The 2 hectare plot for irrigation for commercial purposes for each household is to be pegged. And this is what Maofa should be doing. She should be seeing that she's strategizing and partnering with development partners to give water, irrigation water, piped water, to all settlement villagers, and they say that the irrigation development plan is developed and pegged quickly, not even to dream about removing people from Chimwin. That will not happen. The people have since petitioned the president, and have submitted their petition. We agree, no one is moving. Tokwe Mkosi was built for the people to benefit, not for one individual company, not for Billy Rotenberg.
But, Honorable Basikiti, your critics will say, wait a minute, the president has already said Mr. Basikiti is in the wrong basket. So how is he going to listen to you?
The president might have said Mr. Basikiti is in the wrong basket. Basikiti explained himself about that. The issue of Chingwizi settlement is not a political issue. The wrong basket and the right basket had something to do with going to Congress party politically. We were doing our party politics, and the Chingwizi issue is a government program.
That was former Maswingo Provincial Affairs Minister and Mwenezi East Member of Parliament Kudakwashe Basikiti on the line with Studio 7 from Mwenezi.
Efforts to get a comment from Rotenberg, who were futile as an aide who answered his mobile phone, said he was in Chisumbanje and will return the call, which he had not done by the time we went on air. Maofa told Studio 7 she was in a meeting. But resident director of the Development Trust of Zimbabwe, Charles Madongo, tells Studio 7 that they are the ones who invited Rotenberg, as they are the legitimate owners of the land, and Basikiti is misleading himself.
Development Trust of Zimbabwe bought Nwanetse Ranch.
Who is the Development Trust of Zimbabwe? If you can just give us a brief background.
The Development Trust of Zimbabwe is owned by a trust which was formed and blessed by the present president and the late Mzenda. These three guys, Nkomo came up with the idea, and he put it through his colleagues, and they agreed. The farm belongs to Development Trust of Zimbabwe, and the trustees of Zimbabwe Development Trust are composed of politicians or figures of status from 10 provinces of the country.
How then was it acquired for resettlement?
The truth is that Development Trust belongs to what I just told you. It's documented, it's written. We've been fighting this thing for too long.
And How about these allegations that you are working with Billy Rottenberg?
How Billy came in, my brother, let me explain to you. Billy was in Zaire. He was mining there, whatever business he had there. I had no knowledge what he was doing there. Because we had no money in Waneti, because, you know, because of the politics of Zimbabwe, a pressure was put on some banks not to borrow us money as Waneti. Rottenberg came because we needed money. We couldn't get money from the banks.
That was Resident Director of the Development Trust of Zimbabwe, Charles Madongo, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Noanets Range.
A human rights activist says South Africa should prosecute perpetrators of the xenophobic violence that has seen more than seven people losing their lives in the past few weeks. Deputy Director Tiseke Kasambala of the Open Society Initiative for Southern Africa tells Studio 7's Sandra Nyaira that impunity in the 2008 xenophobia attacks is largely to blame for the recurring violence targeting foreigners, as the South African government reluctantly prosecuted assailants for lesser crimes and not murder.
Since 2008, almost 7 years since that violence broke out and 62 people were killed, there's never been a successful prosecution for murder of those who were arrested at the time for killing foreign nationals. And so our concern right now is, since this new cycle of violence began, we have seen a whole spate of activities and actions by the government, forming ministerial task forces, saying they want to address the root causes of xenophobia. But once again, we are concerned by the impunity that seems to accompany this type of violence, where people are being arrested but not being charged with murder, for example. We've only had one arrest for the murder of Emmanuel Sithole, the Mozambican national who was killed in Alexandria, but we would like to see more prosecutions.
What can be done by other African governments in particular to ensure that South Africa really makes sure that justice is not denied to those people who have been wronged?
Saudi leaders should be pushing a bit more in terms of pushing for justice. One of the things that we've had a problem with, especially regionally, when we look at what's been happening within the Southern African development community, you saw that the SADC tribunal had its human rights mandate removed. So this limits just how far SADC as a body can push some of these issues in terms of individual cases. Like, for example, what happened in 2008. If the relatives of those who'd been killed or the victims of the relatives of the victims who'd been killed in 2008 had found that they could not get justice here in South Africa, they would have been able to push it to the SADC tribunal, but that's not been the case. So what we're saying is there needs to be the facilitation of successful prosecutions of the perpetrators of violence against foreign nationals. And SADC leaders have a role to play in pushing for this. Beyond SADC leaders, there's the African Commission on Human and People's Rights, which can also play a big role in calling for the government to ensure that those who committed such acts are brought to justice. There needs to be investigations and prosecution.
And that was Deputy Director Tiseke Kasambala of the Open Society Initiative for Southern Africa, OSISA, speaking with Studio 7 Sandra Nyaira from Johannesburg, South Africa.
In South Africa today, President Jacob Zuma told members of civil society organizations representing foreigners living in South Africa that the country is doing its best to contain the violence which claimed many lives in 2008.
When it happened in 2008, we adopted a certain approach. We had interactions, talked to everyone, talked to communities, as well as the foreign nationals. We talked to the UNHCR, the United Nations that deals with refugees. We did what we thought was enough at the time.
Malawian President Arthur Peter Mutharika says regional leaders should meet to address the crisis in South Africa.
We need to deal with this, and we're working on it. I'm in touch with, you know, my brother, President Zuma. We'll be talking, and next week we have a summit of SADC in Harare on 29th, and I'm sure we will talk about these things. And the summit is about integration. So what more integration than people? We integrate because we want people to have a better life. That's why I'm talking about integration.
Olga Stillman, a representative of a South African-based organization called Samkela Women's Movement, tells reporter Standekile Mhlanga her organization is working in partnership with South African women in dialogue to urge especially women and youth to shun xenophobia.
We don't want xenophobia in Africa. We all belong together. We can't allow the situation whereby we will be divided by the oppressor. Our people are coming all the way from different countries. And the country that the South Africans fled to on the apartheid regime. And then they got the safety there and they were trained there. Now we say as women in South Africa that we've forgotten that those were the people, the first people that welcomed and comforted us. Why must we treat them bad? Why must we let the enemies laugh over us? Why we all belong in Africa? We Africans, we must treat each other with respect and love.
How is your organization contributing to efforts to curb xenophobia?
We are actually making the awareness campaign on the xenophobia and visiting the areas. We are counseling the people that are affected, and we are also making the awareness for the people that are amongst us, as in particular the youth. We are making awareness that they must welcome every black African. If they can't give chase to a white man, why must they give chase to a black woman?
That was Olga Stillman, a representative of Samkela Women's Movement, on the line from South Africa. Some observers say these xenophobia attacks are a sign that pan-Africanism will always remain a big dream in Africa.
It's very much alive. We are using these particular incidents as one of the ways to not only show that it's still alive, but to revive its significance to the generality of the global African nation.
South Africa is part of Africa. It cannot remove itself from its geographical location. And that being the case, it cannot then remove itself from the spirit of Ubuntu.
You hear some people when they are going to Zimbabwe, black people, black South Africans, saying to you they are now going to Africa.
We will give you more details on this issue tomorrow here on Studio 7. Don't miss it.
Coming up,
a closer look at xenophobic attacks in South Africa.
And Brock Caps United now on the verge of collapse. Stay tuned for more details.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Italian police say they are conducting raids targeting 18 suspected Islamic extremists who are believed to be connected to attacks in Pakistan and may have planned an assault on the Vatican.
Pakistanis expressed shock and sorrow after it emerged that a U.S. counter-terrorism operation accidentally killed two male hostages, an American aid worker and an Italian held by Al-Qaeda on the Afghan-Pakistan border.
Indonesia has asked foreign embassies to send representatives to a maximum security prison on the island of Nusa Kambangan this weekend to visit prisoners awaiting execution for drug trafficking convictions.
A series of new studies by U.S. seismological experts is drawing a closer link between drilling for oil and gas and the disturbing rise in the number of earthquakes in areas not usually prone to seismic activity.
And Armenian President Serge Sarkisian has thanked the world leaders who attended a memorial service for the victims of a mass killing of Armenians by Ottoman Turks 100 years ago.
As the wave of xenophobic attacks died down in South Africa, foreigners who had been driven away from their homes are slowly returning back to some communities where the situation remains tense. But most returnees are not sure whether this is the end of the attacks, which were in some cases done through burning victims alive using motor vehicle tires, a strategy used by political activists during the struggle for freedom in South Africa that was commonly referred to as necklacing.
We are asking foreigners to pack their bags and go back to their countries.
Those are the words of Zulu King Goodwill Zwelithini that many blame for igniting the xenophobic attacks that displaced at least 5,000 people and left about 7 dead. The king has, however, denied that the words were meant to order his subjects to kill foreigners. During the height of the attacks, Zwelithini convened an imbizo, a special Zulu meeting called by the king or traditional leaders to map out strategies on important issues, and he ordered his subjects to, in fact, wage a war against those who attack foreigners. Zimbabwe's ambassador to South Africa, Isaac Moyo, says Zimbabweans who had fled flashpoints like Alexandra near Johannesburg and the port city of Durban have gone back to their local homes with heavy hearts.
Nobody can really be 100% certain that the criminal elements who have been at the forefront of this may not do one or two small things.
Some observers say as long as the reasons for the xenophobic attacks are not clearly identified and addressed, it will be difficult to deal with this kind of violence, which claimed the lives of 62 people in similar incidents in 2008. Some South Africans are angry that foreigners are grabbing most of the jobs in the country. Zimbabwean academic and political commentator Dinizulu Macapulana says there's a hidden hand behind the xenophobic attacks.
From my observations, this spate of violence is owed to a third force that has always been there in South Africa. There are certain embedded right-wing elements that are using money and some intelligence details to fend black-on-black violence as a matter of diverting attention from the issues of blacks versus white in South Africa.
Pakistani national Salman Khan strongly believes that the xenophobic attacks have united foreigners.
The South Africans by nature are very peaceful, and this is the misunderstanding they have for some reason. We do not know what is the motive and who is instigating this thing, but by and large, South African people are very accommodating. And that's why it's a phenomenon that you have so many refugees and we don't have a refugee camp in South Africa. So definitely there is something else in between which we need to look at it. Definitely there are things like inequality, high rate of employment, and poverty. These are the fundamental issues that one cannot subside. The South African by nature are very peaceful, and this is the misunderstanding they have for some reason. We do not know what is the motive and who is instigating this thing.
For a country that went through the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, that was tasked with discovering and revealing past wrongdoing by the apartheid government with the hope of avoiding future conflicts, some are asking if the healing process was unsuccessful after all. The Zimbabwe Electoral Commission says it has yet to decide whether to compile a new voters' roll for the 2018 general elections or continue using the existing one that's been condemned as flawed by opposition parties and civil society groups. ZEC chairperson Rita Makarau is quoted on the state-owned Herald newspaper as saying lack of funds is complicating their operations and making it difficult to come up with a new register. But the MDCT says a new voter's roll is the only way to go. Studio 7's Ntunga Milinkomo reached Jack Zaba of the Election Resource Center for his take on the issue.
Honestly, we cannot clean up a rotten rat in the house when we can't even identify the rat. Zimbabweans want to see the rat chest. But no, this is the smelly rat in the house. So let's clean it. So that option certainly can only work if they want to clean it, can only work if they start opening up about that old voters roll which they inherited or which they intend to inherit from Tobayo Ambede. But the option of a new voters roll, actually, we are saying no, there is nothing. Democracy should not fail because a nation or the state is claiming to be broke to fund it. We will not accept that. Because the moment we start accepting that or making compromises in Zimbabwe, that the state or electoral authorities can go it their way, claiming there's no money. The next thing they will tell us that we can't have 2018 elections because we have no money. Then we have elections happening after 8 years.
That was Jack Zaba of the Election Resource Center on the line from Harare with Studio 7. Coming up, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The March 29th Uzbek presidential election was less than free and fair, according to the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, or OSCE, observer mission. Longtime authoritarian leader Islam Karimov won a fourth consecutive term, garnering over 90% of the vote against three nominal rivals. According to Uzbekistan's Election Commission, there was 91% voter turnout. The OSCE observer mission reported that the elections not only contravened the constitutional limit of two consecutive presidential terms, but were further marked by lack of genuine political alternatives, restrictions on freedoms of expression and association, and widespread legal and organizational shortcomings. The 77-year-old Karimov has led the former Soviet Republic in Central Asia since the late 1980s and has sought to neutralize all opposition to his rule. In 2005, the Uzbek government conducted a violent crackdown on demonstrators in the Fergana Valley city of Andijan that is believed to have left more than 100 dead. Almost all Western media have been barred from reporting inside the country since that time, and independent Uzbek journalists and activists face sustained harassment. The United States continues to firmly support the rights of all Uzbeks to take part in free, fair, and periodic elections marked by meaningful choice. As such, said U.S. Ambassador to the U.S. Mission to the OSCE, Daniel Baer, "We remain committed to pursuing democratic reforms and the protection of human rights in Uzbekistan, in support of economic development and regional stability. In the spirit of partnership with Uzbekistan, the U.S. encourages the government to respond to the OSCE report and to fulfill its international obligations and OSCE commitments on democratic elections and civil and political rights."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
And in sports, Capes United are in another financial test when the Castle Lager Premier Soccer League program enters its week 6 starting tomorrow. Chances are that the club may fail to fulfill its next game. Our reporter Michael Cariati has more details from Harare.
The former Zimbabwe champions are in serious financial problems to the extent that coach Mark Harrison is not sure whether the team would be able to fulfill the matches as the Green Machine prepared to face informed FC Kariba at the National Sports Stadium Sunday. Harrison says Capes United do not have even a cent to fulfill some matches.
"We are in dire straits, and I need to tell the people, because the people need to understand what's happening. Don't know when we can travel, when we can't travel."
The British coach says the Green Machine may cease to exist in 2 weeks' time if they do not get an urgent financial package from the corporate world or well-wishers.
"I personally think we're 2 weeks away from closing the door."
Even club owner Twain Piri admits that the former Zimbabwean Cup teams are in trouble, saying the harsh economic climate in the country has not been favorable. He adds that Capes United are not the only team struggling financially.
"Our economy, it doesn't allow. I'm not the only one in this country who haven't paid. I know of two clubs that haven't paid for the past 5 months. Capes United is not the only team that is struggling."
But in the meantime, says Siri, he has put up a plan that will see the Green Machine fulfill their matches, including the one against BetTV Kariba. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Cariat.
Thanks, Michael, and remember, listeners, to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will be talking with listeners and experts about the deteriorating situation in Zimbabwe as suspected ZANU-PF supporters go on the rampage.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.